Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Hello there, welcome to the show. This one is brought to you by West Yorkshire Electrical. Tell me something impressive about solar panels, Michael.
You get free electricity from them. That's good, isn't it? And also save the planet and stuff.
Even when the government mandated sunshine is not out, they work, yeah. Don't they? It's just light they work with.
Yeah, well, I mean, you do need sunshine for them, to be fair.
For them to work properly.
Yeah, obviously, yeah. We're into Matt Letizia territory here, for anyone who doesn't realise when he claimed there was some government control. But no, solar panels, they do work while the sun's out.
And where can I get some?
West Yorkshire Electrical.
They will do them, won't they? Because yeah. They're specialists in renewable. They will work with anything with wires in it, quite frankly, which is good news, isn't it? And so they don't have to subcontract out any roof work when you get your panels done. They've got their own team of roofers.
Very useful.
How about that? West Yorkshire Electrical, wyelectrical.co.uk for details. Find them on socials as well. Phil Hay?
Hello.
Nice of you to join us. I didn't think you would. Now you've got your new friends writing about Real Madrid and Man City in your DAF newsletter. Do you want to give that a quick plug?
Can you think of anybody less gone global than me? We've got a new newsletter starting at The Athletic, which I'm writing 4 days a week. So if you want to sign up, we'd be massively appreciated. Maybe me, Leeds will appear in there as often as possible, as will Hearts, but probably not that much.
I'm sure the international audience are desperate for more Hearts content.
Desperate for Hearts content. Actually, had we started soon enough, we'd definitely use that Hibs clip of one player booting the ball in Joe Newell's face and then it hitting somebody else in the face as well, which was classic Hibs.
Did you notice as well, as it bounced off the second guy, it actually bounced back and hit the first guy again when he was on the floor?
Oh, it's tremendous, yeah. There is no limit to their levels of embarrassment. So that would have made the cut, definitely. But no, if you want a bit of fun in the morning, well, actually, it's kind of lunchtime over here when it drops. But yeah, sign up. I would appreciate it.
Is it right that you write that in your Athletic-branded hot tub? On your gold-plated MacBook.
Yes.
Yeah.
With champagne.
Yeah, and it's that you've got a bowl, you demand a bowl of Skittles as part of your contract with Athletic,
right,
don't you?
Yeah. In the same way that I travel to games by helicopter.
Yeah, so it's the big bowl of Skittles, but with all the green ones taken out because of heart.
That's absolutely correct. That petty with certain things.
But the Hibs thing.
My kids have never understood it, and my wife even less. Yeah.
I think people listening and watching will understand that level of pettiness, though.
Yeah, I don't buy a lot of green things, put it that way. I went through a long period when I was young where I wouldn't wear anything green either.
Good lad. Anyway.
Is that good? I don't know.
Yeah. Speaking of good lads, should we segue into Stuart Dallas and the announcement that he's retiring?
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't think it comes as an entire surprise, does it? Given the nature of the injury, given the length of time it's taken him to try and recover. But it's still very, very sad, isn't it? And it's another piece of that Bielsa team that is going.
It is. And I think the difference is that with every single player, they come to the end of the line kind of naturally or organically, whether it's their career or at a club. And you've seen that with Luke Ayling. You're going to see it with Liam Cooper in the summer as well. I don't think there's any prospect of a contract extension for him. Dallas is out of contract as well, so would have been leaving in the summer. But the difference with Dallas is that this injury came when, I think it'd be fair to say, he was absolutely at his prime in terms of age, but also in terms of the way he was playing. I don't think he'd ever played better. I don't think he'd ever looked better. I don't think he'd ever looked more sure of himself as a footballer. He'd gone through that evolution of, I mean, I remember speaking to his agent for a piece of 4 or 5 years ago, where he was saying, you know, when he was playing part-time in Northern Ireland and they first picked up on the fact that he had a good bit of talent, he was kind of pale as a sheet of paper and skinny as a rake, was how his agent put it. You know, it was this guy who had loads of talent, but you weren't quite sure how it was going to work out for him. And he went to Brentford and then on to Leeds. And I think it did take him a long time to properly find his niche. He was kind of a winger who ended up at fullback. And then he was given, you know, the sort of almost impossibly complex task of becoming that 8/10 midfielder that Bielsa loved and, you know, kind of had in Matthijs Kleek as well, and turned out to be exceptionally good at it. And I do think that the sort of first thing you should say about Dallas and the last thing is that in 2021, when Leeds were at the peak, he was player of the year, and I think deservedly as well. And that was a squad where you had Rafinha, you had Calvin Phillips, you had Bamford, who was having his best season for Leeds, 17 goals in the Premier League, could easily have won it himself. But I think Dallas was the right pick from it. And again, I think, if memory serves me right, he was 1.3 million coming in from Brentford back in 2015. They've had every penny's worth and more from it, irrespective of the fact that he hasn't played for 2 years. But you're absolutely right. The length of time out, combined with the fact that he had tried to return to training, that it hadn't got any further down the line than doing his best to get fit again. Every time you were asking Farker, it was, he'd kind of been doing individual sessions, then he'd been out for a bit, he was in with the team, then he was out a bit. I think you could join the dots, and it wasn't really a surprise for anybody that this was announced yesterday.
Have you done a piece on this as well? Because you went up to speak to him, didn't you? We've got a few of the clips from that, actually.
Yeah, there's...
Just lined up here.
Yeah, there's a colour piece, just my kind of thoughts on him as a player and how it's been and what he's done in his time here. But also, we sat down with him for the best part of an hour yesterday. I have to say, he was pretty philosophical about it all. You could tell it had been difficult. I think you could tell as well. And he said, you know, he'd made the decision a couple of weeks ago, but I'd had to keep it private until the point where he could tell the players. The players didn't actually find out until Wednesday morning, shortly before it was announced officially.
I was going to say, you can see the video of that on the LUFC various channels, can't you?
Yeah, it's worth a watch that. It's very unusual to see that kind of, you know, something as private as that and that level of insight into something like that happening. So yeah, definitely well worth a watch. But he kind of said to us, you know, mentally he's fine. He said he's kind of at peace with the decision. I think there's got to be a quality of life aspect to this as well, which is that, on the one hand, he's saying, I just can't get fit enough and up to the levels to play elite football anymore. But the damage done to that leg was so severe that there has to be a risk that if there was any more done to it, that it could have consequences for him a long way down the line. He's got a family. He's, you know, in his early 30s, so years and years ahead of him. He's achieved a lot in the game as well. So it wouldn't have been his choice. And as I say, you're talking about somebody who has kind of lost their career in their prime and, you know, deserved a kind of happier ending at Leeds than this. But all the same, he seemed pretty content.
Yeah, the starting point for this was that attempted tackle on Jack Grealish, wasn't it? And you started off by talking to him about the nature of the injury.
I knew from the first minute I'd done the injury and you know, that night I went to the LGI and the next morning I knew straight away how bad the injury was. So, you know, I spoke with the surgeon when I went down to London, and albeit I had maybe a bit too much morphine and stuff in me, but I can remember some of the conversations, and I was concerned then, of course I was, and everybody was, and I could go into it. I don't really want to because I don't really know the medical terms of how to speak about some of it, but, you know, be here now, I think we've won, and I think that describes how serious the injury was.
So it does sound like he's been like to hell and back, doesn't it? I mean, something like that.
I think when the operation took place, I think he genuinely thought that he would make it back and that he would have a chance of recovering. I think he knew it would be very dicey and very difficult, but I don't think it was a case of straight away saying, you know, this might be my career. I think he knew the risk was there, but as he was pushing himself through, because he said to us, earlier in the interview, I think it was the section that the BBC did with him, that he'd asked to be in every day. You know, he'd said to the club, I don't want days off. I want to try and make this happen. I want to be around the training ground. And there was a genuine attempt on his part and on the part of the medical staff to get him fit and get him back into training. But it was a massively serious injury. And they knew that at the time. And you don't hear often in football about players fracturing their femur. I don't know whether you could say it's the worst injury you can suffer, but it's incredibly difficult and complex to recover from and get fit from after. Again, there were problems with the knee as well. I'd seen him actually about 3 weeks ago up at Thorpe Arch and just asked him how he was doing. And he was really sort of level-headed about it. He wasn't defeatist and he wasn't kind of accepting at that point that it was all over. But he wasn't delusional either about what was going on and also about how much time had elapsed since the injury had taken place. But to look at his knee, you could see the amount of trauma there. You could see the amount of surgery that had been done. And it did make you think that's got to be incredibly difficult to play again properly on that, you know, at elite level. And as I say, you know, one more hit on that, what are the consequences of it?
And Michael is not fully retiring until the end of the season, which you wonder if that opens the door to a 93rd minute tearful substitute appearance against Southampton on the final day.
It would be nice to see him again, or hopefully be fit enough to play in the kind of rumoured Liam Cooper testimonial, even if it's just literally to come off the bench, get a well-deserved round of applause, make a pass and then come off again. Maybe the kind of lung-busting runs into the box that we've got used to from him won't be happening anymore, but it would be nice to see him again.
He was very conscious of that, I think. He'd said to us that if Farker had said to him, this is too much of a distraction, you know, at this point of the season. And in fairness, you know, Leeds are right in the heart of the running, a few weeks away from knowing whether or not they're going to be automatically promoted. And he said, if Farker had said to me, please keep this until the end of the season, then he would have done quite happily. He was quite strong in saying he didn't want to be a distraction. He didn't want this to divert attention. But at the same time, having made the decision a few weeks ago, he seemed pretty relieved about the fact that he'd actually been able to tell people and to kind of confront the need to have the meeting with the players and to tell them what was going on. And as I say, it's just a shame to go out like that, because it's not as if people have got tired of Dallas. It's not as if people have looked at Dallas and said, oh, his kind of powers are diminished, he needs to move on. He was genuinely one of the best players at the point where he was injured. And one of the reasons I was asking him about the incident itself was because it was such a split-second thing. Premier League football's so fast that things like that do happen in the blink of an eye. And you would never, I think he knew at the time that it was really bad, but you would never really expect consequences as severe as this from, you know, a tackle like that.
One of the things that I found quite poignant, and it's only a very, very short, quick clip, is this one, is when he spoke to you about overhearing other players talking about it in the canteen, and this is what he said.
We're talking about it, and I just said, lads, just enjoy it, because in a split second, it can be over.
And that mirrors exactly what you were saying there, Phil, like, all it takes is just that one moment. Because I suppose you grow up thinking you're invincible, don't you? And
yeah.
As you get older, you realise you're not. But when you're in your 20s and you're a footballer, you're getting loads of money, and suddenly it's gone.
Career-ending injuries are actually few and far between these days as well, because the science around it has improved so much. There were times when probably 20 years ago this injury would have happened and instantly they would have come out and said, yeah, that's it. There's nothing much you can do for this. But as it was, they can reconstruct so much these days that you probably always think, oh, actually, I've got a chance here.
Yeah, he went to, the surgery was done initially. It was done, I think, the day after his injury or 48 hours after his injury. And it was done by a surgeon called Andy Williams, who is well known in football circles and does a lot of operations like that, and has, I think, a very high strike rate when it comes to getting players back from, severe leg and knee injuries. But it was that bad. It was Melier and Shackleton that he was talking about specifically there, that he'd been having lunch with. And obviously they're in their kind of early to mid-20s, and it is a good lesson for them to kind of enjoy it and make the most of it while you can. And Dallas is the best example of why.
And how close was he to a comeback? That's one of the points that you addressed as well.
I didn't get real close, but I got back. I was on the pitch and I was moving around and doing really well, and I just needed more. And, you know, I've had setbacks in there. I've had two infections in there. And that's obviously a big setback by itself. And I've been to surgery so many times. I've been to theatre about 10 times and operated on about 7. So I think that itself tells its own story.
I mean, operated on 7 times.
Yeah. Well, that explains, like he says, why it is that he's having to call it a day. Eventually it's too much. But he did say that even if he'd been younger, he didn't think that he'd be making it back now. It's just been too... There's been too much damage done that he can't get himself physically back up to the level that he needs to be at. So it wouldn't make any difference if he was 22 as opposed to 32. And I think that's why he's been able to be quite philosophical about it, is that he has had Premier League football and he has had promotion with Leeds, and he has had the best part of a decade here and played a lot of games, good times in Northern Ireland as well. It's not as if it's a career cut hideously short. You know, he's lost years. I think to look at him and look how fit he was prior to the injury, you could have seen him going on well into his late 30s. I mean, that was the irony of him. Two of the things I was writing about in the colour piece that I did was his versatility, you know, the ability to play basically anywhere. I don't think he ever played in goal. I don't think he played up front, but you'd have given him a whirl because he seemed to be so good at just slotting in anywhere else. But also the fact that he was, looked unbreakable. Like 45 starts in the promotion season and then ever present for Bielsa in the 2021 season in the Premier League. And I remember him getting injured and coming off against Everton at Goodison Park and thinking, I'm pretty sure at that point he was the last player who hadn't missed any games through injury, the last player to get injured, which kind of made sense because that's how he was. And it was one of those things where you thought everything's just conspiring against Bielsa here. You know, that was Dallas getting injured was kind of the sure sign of that. And that wasn't the bad one. You know, that came a couple of months later. But for so long, he was kind of unbreakable and he was massively versatile. But he goes away from it knowing that he's done good things, and he's got some, you know, he's got some memories for life from it.
I know he's never been particularly close to coming back this year, but a fully fit Stuart Dallas in this squad, you've got to think he'd probably have played about 10 games at left back, 10 games at right back, and another 10 in midfield, wouldn't he? He would have been, once again, doing the Stuart Dallas thing of just dotting around the pitch, filling in holes wherever he's needed.
I think he'd have helped last season as well. I think you'd have got higher levels of performance, but also thicker skin from Dallas than you did from other players. He falls into the category of footballer and bloke who just seemed perfectly made for Leeds, seemed to be able to cope with the environment, seemed to be able to cope with the kind of big surges of pressure that you get round here. Whether he'd have made any significant difference to Leeds going down is impossible to say, but he wouldn't have done them any harm. And yes, he's been around the dressing room, and yes, he's been around the training ground, but there's a really big difference. But that helps, you know, I'm not saying that doesn't help, and it from a kind of psychological point of view, it can be good for the squad, but it's not the same as having a player on the pitch.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I think one of the big takeaways from this is actually what you're saying, what he's like as a bloke, Phil, the psychological angle on it all. And it would be very easy. And I mean, I'm absolutely sure if I was to break my leg that severely and end up in surgery straight away, I would feel terribly, terribly sorry for myself. I don't know about you.
I mean, I've had career-ending injuries myself, so could have made it pro and all that. But yeah, I'd be the same. I mean, you've seen me when I get a bad back. I just mope around the place, very upset with myself.
I didn't have time to feel sorry for myself, because as soon as the injury happened, I had the surgery, I was straight back home. I had to straight away start the recovery process. So I lay on the sofa for days on end, like my leg in a brace and on a CPM machine, which gets it moving, and just for hours and hours and hours, for days, for months, and obviously played it over and over in my head. But that only eats you up, you know what I mean? Like, what if I had done this? And my granddad was a really, really wise man, and he always said to me, you can't change what has happened, and I couldn't change it. I was in this position where I had to do my rehab, and I tried not to think about it.
It's a very pragmatic attitude to something so severe, isn't it?
Yeah, it reminds me a lot, actually, of when I interviewed Adam Forshaw about his injuries and him talking about how it does you in mentally, because it's not, I don't think it's necessarily the period of time out. It's, I mean, that doesn't help, but it's the fact that you have no promises and no assurances about what's going to happen at the end of it. And sometimes, and this was the case with Forshaw, it feels massively open-ended. Nobody can say to you, in 3-4 months' time, you're going to be 100% fine and you'll be playing again, so you've just got to stay the course. That's the case with some injuries where you do have a set timescale and it all goes to plan. But particularly with Forshaw, and I think Dallas will have had some of this as well, or has had some of this, the complications that come with it mean that you're always fighting it. Like Dallas was mentioning there, infections in your knee. You go out to train, then suddenly you develop that, and you can, even though you in your mind you've got this kind of plan ahead of you of what you're going to do. It's all stunted. I mean, ages ago, I bumped into Dallas in reception. I was going in for a press conference and was just asking if he was all right. And he said, well, yeah, but I get a bit sick of, you know, up and down the stairs between the canteen and the dressing rooms and the gym. And you do get a bit claustrophobic in the four walls. And I think particularly when you don't have any guarantee of light at the end of the tunnel. And he did speak a lot about it. It sounds to me like he dealt with it mentally really well, which is not easy. And it was nice to hear him say that at this point he was kind of fairly at peace with the decision, fairly at peace with the incident with Grealish as well. Because I think the worst thing about this would be if it left you with a lot of bitterness.
You have to sort of master your own mind type of thing. But by no means am I a psychologist, and I didn't feel the need that I needed to speak to psychologists throughout the whole process. But I think I've been strong enough in my own mind that not to let myself slip into that. And other people aren't, you know, I totally understand that they're maybe not fortunate enough to be able to do that. I get that. And I just felt that I couldn't let myself get into that hole. I've a wife and three kids at home that mean more to me than anything. And I couldn't be dragged into that. Don't get me wrong, they've had to listen to some stuff throughout the 2 years. My wife probably needs a medal, but I'm really thankful to her and to my kids for getting me through that as well.
There lie the words of a man who's kind of growing up and moving beyond being your 20s and partying.
You wonder as well if the start of his career plays a part of this as well, because he's not someone who was at 17, was in Chelsea's academy and was always going to be a professional footballer and already had a contract on the table for 25 grand. It's kind of from where he's come from to where he's got. Does it maybe help you be a little bit more philosophical that you've gone, well, actually, that was where I got to was beyond where I ever expected. So maybe it's fine that's where it ended.
Maybe that's a hallmark of the whole Bielsa side and why that whole period feels so seductive to us as well. Players playing way beyond the ceiling that we probably all thought they had. And you've seen it. I guess there's a real world example with Calvin Phillips now, who it looks like he probably peaked at Leeds and has moved on and found it a struggle to rediscover the same levels of form. And maybe that was as good as it got for many of those players.
I think they all appreciate as well, though, that they were lucky to be in that moment of time with Bielsa, lucky to be in that period and to not only experience what developed and what happened, but to have been responsible for it. I mean, Dallas spoke about Bielsa as most players do. And I think a lot of this crop are coming away from it thinking that when they retire, or as with Dallas having now retired, that those were the best years of their careers, best years of their footballing lives, or certainly as players. So I guess that helps you to be a bit less bitter about it, that you did have that. And I think Michael's probably right that Dallas's start in as a footballer, you know, semi-pro, I think he worked as a carpenter or the furniture maker over in Northern Ireland before coming to Belfast. There was never any kind of promise to him of a sustained professional career, or I guess more to the point, never any promise of big money. You have players in academies, you know, Premier League academies in particular, who are rich long before they break into the first team. Some of them get rich without ever breaking into first team. It was never like that for him, and I think he appreciates what he's had. He appreciates how it's gone at Leeds. I think he realizes as well that, and a lot of them do, that the appreciation for that squad isn't going to diminish anytime soon. So he is one of these players who can come back and will always be well thought of here because of what went on for as long as he was a player.
Absolutely. And then the final clip we've got is the one talking about when he realised there was no comeback, and how, and it kind of taps into the clip we played before about shifting goals and perhaps seeing a life beyond football.
You know, I said to the physios that my reward was to get back on the pitch for them, and the reward changed to being fit and healthy after football. There's only so much you can do till your knee, and without it maybe needing a knee replacement or something like that. I'm not at that stage, but you know, if I had continued on, possibly, but I'm not fit to get to the level I need to be at. I can't physically get to it. So, and I don't believe that even if I was younger, it's nothing to do with age. I don't believe even if I was younger that I would come back from this. It's the injury has been so serious, and I've just had to deal with it.
It's that little sigh at the end that just gives it away, doesn't it? As philosophical as he's been, that I've just had to deal with it.
Yeah, he's all right though. You know, he definitely is. He was saying that there's potentially a role of some sort for him at Leeds. I think that's being discussed. I don't think he's got his coaching badges, although we didn't get into discussing that. But if he hasn't, you could imagine that. He strikes me as having a pretty good temperament for coaching and management. So you'd like to think that it won't be difficult for him to find something to do next. But you 100% didn't get the impression that he'd spent the last 2 years thinking much about what was coming next. I think he's spent the last 2 years thinking about you know, I'm going to get fit, I'm going to play again, I'm going to get another few years out of my career. So he'll have a lot to sort out there. But as I say, he's got a lot of friends in the game and I don't think he'll struggle.
Yeah, just as we wrap it up, tapping back into what I was saying before, it's another piece of that Bielsa team that's gone. And I think that's my big takeaway from it, you know, from a selfish sort of fan's point of view. And I think, should we do a show where we speak about him from a fan's perspective as well? Maybe look back on the sort of playing highlights. I think that'd be a good thing to do.
Yeah, I think there are definitely enough moments worthy of a show there. But yeah, we need to kind of digest it a bit, I think.
He said, actually, the one downside of the winner at Man City was the fact that the stadium was empty, which is actually a kind of lasting legacy of the Bielsa era, isn't it? The kind of crunch point of it and the best periods of it. Well, not the best, but I mean, from 2018 onwards, it was really good. But where it really, really peaked, the grounds were empty. There were no fans and it was really, really unfortunate. But that, I think, is what you'll always think of when you think of Dallas, that third man run and that finish. It was a beautiful moment.
And running off to the corner. Yeah, and it's been immortalised, hasn't it? And that's his place in our history. And I think we're just dead grateful for him. Because it was a late arrival, wasn't he? He didn't. And when I say his arrival, I mean his arrival as a probably top draw player at Leeds was probably the Derby playoff game.
Mm. Well, bear in mind that him and Liam Cooper are really close. And one of the stories about them was that when they found out that Bielsa was coming in, they both like a drink. I mean, they don't drink to excess, you know. But it has been known for Dallas to have the odd Guinness, and they basically said to each other, "We'll stop drinking, among other things, because this is going to be a serious boot camp. You know, Bielsa's going to crack the whip and it's going to be really hard, so we need to be in the best condition possible." Cooper was kind of Bielsa's man from the off, you know, played from the start. It took Dallas the best part of a year to get into the team and to become a regular starter. But what was interesting was that when he did, Bielsa was kind of hell-bent, and I think in a really positive way, on making sure that he could find a place for Dallas in the team, whether it was left-back, right-back, and as it turned out, you know, moving him into the centre of midfield. But I thought he looked incredibly competent, actually. Really, really good midfielder, central midfielder in the end. So it was a little bit of a slow burn. And you're right, actually. I mean, you sort of bury that Derby game as much as you can, because why would anybody want to revisit it? But he was probably the only Leeds player who came out of that with much credit in the end. You know, you had Berardi getting sent off, you had Cooper and Kessié doing what they did. You had everybody kind of losing it in the second half, and he was the one player who was able to hold it together, and he was the reason why it was still right on edge up until the end.
Well, he goes with our best wishes, I guess, and as we were saying, I hope he gets to stay around in some capacity, because we are sentimental, aren't we, when it comes to football, and it feels terribly cruel just suddenly cutting him adrift at this point.
I bet he's straight off to get a season ticket at Ibrox, you know. There he is.
I hope he almost does take a bit of time for himself, because it sounds like he's had basically 2 years of just doing exercises, and it can't have been an awful lot of fun for him. Just have a bit of Stuart time, have a bit of fun.
Well, go well, Stuart Dallison, and thank you.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.